Very good afternoon to you. It's 23 minutes past four, Wednesday, 23rd of November. It's time to catch up with what's happening across the pond. Of course, we're talking about the autumn statement today in great detail, and also, of course, the sentencing of the man who was found guilty of the murder of Labour MP Joe Cox. That's all still to come here on the programme. But I do want to catch up with Simon Marks, our US correspondent, who joins me now from Washington. Simon, first time we've had a conversation, really, about what's going on over in America since the election.
Since the upset.
Well, indeed. And it is still an upset for many Americans, isn't it? And it's probably going to be for quite some time. But what are we hearing from Donald Trump on at the moment? He's been appointing ambassadors and putting together his team, essentially, that's going to run the country for the next 4 and possibly 8 years.
Yes, slowly he is doing precisely that. He's actually now in Florida, where we understand he's going to spend the Thanksgiving holiday. Remember that tomorrow is Thanksgiving Day here in the United States. In many ways, the biggest holiday of the year in America, certainly as big as Christmas or July the 4th. The country will come to a standstill for that. But the business of putting together his government will not come to a standstill for Donald Trump. In the last few hours, he has announced that he plans to appoint the governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, to be his ambassador to the United Nations. And that's interesting for two or three different reasons. First of all, she's a woman. It's the first woman that Donald Trump has picked for a senior position. And remember, in the closing days of that utterly momentous election campaign that we were charting every single day here on LBC London News, Donald Trump had difficulties with some women voters based on some of the language that was used in that controversial Access Hollywood videotape, although it didn't derail his presidential ambition. So interesting that Nikki Haley is a woman. Interesting also that she's a Republican who did not support Donald Trump and was very critical of many of the positions that he took on the campaign trail. She's the first person of that ilk to be selected for a top job in Donald Trump's administration. And thirdly, interesting that she is of Indian descent. So she becomes the first prominent Asian American to be selected by Donald Trump for a top position. So that's interesting in and of itself. We're still waiting for a whole raft of other critical appointments to be announced. At any time, I suspect we may hear whether Mitt Romney is indeed his choice to be Secretary of State, whether General James Mattis is indeed his choice to be Defense Secretary. That's certainly what Trump insiders and Donald Trump himself have been hinting at over the last few days. But, you know, until we get those precise names and until we see some of those key positions being filled, it's very hard to know the extent to which he is going to try and put together any kind of balanced team. We know that in the appointments that we've already heard about, Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions, National Security Advisor General Mike Flynn, that he is hewing to ideological purists, people on the far right of the political spectrum here, who reflect much of Donald Trump's own thinking. But Nikki Haley for the United Nations, that's a bit of a surprise. And if he sought further to leaven his selections with, for example, Mitt Romney as Secretary of State, that would give some people here some reason to believe that he is interested in putting some degree of balance together around that cabinet table.
It's interesting that he's gone with the UN ambassador, or UN US ambassador, first of all, or right up there in front, because yes. Wasn't there a lot of conversation about what Donald Trump's relationship with the UN was actually going to be like during the campaign?
Well, I mean, I have to say it is very interesting that he's decided to prioritise this decision. It's certainly something of a surprise. It's not what I think we were expecting to learn who would be the ambassador to the United Nations before, for example, we learn who the Secretary of State is going to be. And yes, of course, there are huge questions about Donald Trump's commitment to the international system, not just to all the various treaties and agreements that the United Nations itself oversees, including, of course, the climate climate change accords that Barack Obama has only just signed. Donald Trump had indicated on the campaign trail he wanted to undo all of those. He's sounding a little bit less committed to completely walking away from them than he was before. But there are all sorts of questions about how he is going to interact with the United Nations. You know, when you cast your mind just a few months down the road, Donald Trump will be making his first speech to a UN General Assembly next September. I mean, who would ever have imagined that Donald Trump would find himself in that position or, you know, attending G7 meetings or presiding over all the affairs of state that as head of state and head of government, he will have to take on in the weeks ahead. One of the questions that is beginning to be answered here, I think, is what kind of a relationship will a Trump administration have with NATO? It's my understanding that Michael Flynn, selected, of course, as Donald Trump's national security advisor, that retired U.S. Army lieutenant general, it's my understanding that he has now agreed to meet with ambassadors from NATO, of course, including the British ambassador. And again, there are those here in international affairs circles who welcome the fact that Michael Flynn has accepted that invitation with, I am told, alacrity after it was first issued just a couple of days ago. So there is some reason to believe that this nascent Trump administration is interested in sending messages of reassurance, if you like, to world capitals. But clearly, many world capitals, London included, have yet fully to establish contacts and ties with the Trump administration at a senior level. And behind the scenes, there is this kind of mad scramble underway with officials in London, in Paris, in Berlin, in all the other major world capitals, trying to figure out who they should be talking to within the Trump team, because they never established those contacts when they thought Donald Trump, on the campaign trail, was not poised for victory.
Well, indeed, that's a very interesting point that you make there, because I know that I think it was Boris Johnson has been criticising our current British ambassador for not getting closer to Mr. Trump during the campaign. Of course, we know that Mr. Farage, Nigel Farage, the UKIP current leader, is very friendly with Donald Trump. And of course, there's issues there about Mr. Trump, as the president-elect, saying that Mrs. May should make Mr. Farage Britain's ambassador to America.
Absolutely. Look, there are huge issues surrounding all of this. First of all, if you go back to the campaign, in a traditional political campaign, and this was anything but that, but in a traditional political campaign, the British government of the day, through its ambassador, through the British embassy here, would have established clear working relationships with senior foreign policy figures in both campaigns, in both the Democratic Party's campaign and the Republican Party's campaign. They didn't do that, and Britain, to be fair to the British ambassador, was by no means alone in failing to establish those ties with Donald Trump and his senior figures. And remember, world leaders have spent the last nine months to a year coming to Washington, D.C., saying to Barack Obama, what on earth is going on? Is Donald Trump going to be this country's next president? And being assured by Barack Obama, John Kerry, the Secretary of State, no need to worry, the common sense and decency of the American people will prevail when the election is held. Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president of the United States. And I think, to some degree, world governments hearing that message heard what they wanted to hear. They heard that Donald Trump wasn't going to be president of the United States, so no need to forge ties with him. Now, of course, they find themselves caught short, and Donald Trump finds himself in a position where, as you say, Chris, you know, that late-night tweet, 36 hours ago, suddenly suggesting that Nigel Farage should be Britain's ambassador to the United States. There is no vacancy. Even if there was, he almost certainly wouldn't even be on the short list of people that Theresa May would consider sending over here to be British ambassador. But this is Donald Trump somewhat cheekily and pugnaciously reminding the government in London that they didn't exactly get close and personal with him while he was on the election campaign trail, and now he is going to make them work for a close personal relationship as he prepares to head into government.
Yes, indeed. It's going to be a very interesting time between now and January. Let's talk about Donald Trump, the businessman. He said he's not obliged to cut ties to his business empire when he takes office on January the 20th, but there's going to be a lot of people who are still going to be questioning exactly what relationship he has with his business,
yes,
and how that's going to be affected by him being president.
Well, and he is correct legally when he says that there is nothing on the statute books here that says that if a highly successful businessman becomes America's president, they should cut ties with their businesses. However, the perception of a conflict of interest is already being created by some of the conversations that he has had with world leaders over the last few days, and also by the inclusion particularly of his daughter Ivanka in some of the meetings that he's been having with international figures over the last few days. We know the campaign, Donald Trump himself confirmed it yesterday during his meeting with the New York Times, that he tried to get Nigel Farage to help him block a wind farm that is being planned to be built near Donald Trump's golf course, golf resort up in Ayrshire. We know that, excuse me, Chris, we know that there are allegations of Donald Trump raising some of his own personal business issues in conversations that he's had in recent days with the leaders of Japan and Argentina. You know, there is pressure on him. Some here even suggest that what he should be doing is liquidating his interests in the Trump organization in order completely to separate himself from his company, put all the assets into either a blind trust or liquidate those assets so that he no longer has a personal interest in the company. There's no indication he plans to do that. The law doesn't require him to do that. But if he doesn't do it, my suspicion is that these conflict of interest allegations are going to dog his footsteps every step of the way, and that has the potential to become a big problem for him.
And just briefly, Simon, I'd like to talk about Hillary Clinton. We obviously haven't heard much from her since she lost the election, but a growing number of academics and activists are certainly calling for, well, authorities to fully audit, or what is it, recount some of the votes in some key battlegrounds in case the results could have been skewed by in some way.
Yes, three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin.
Important states.
You've got very important states. I mean, states is certainly Wisconsin, one of the states where the election was ultimately decided and where the Clinton team was really stunned, I think, by the fact that she hadn't seemingly made the case successfully enough. Now, amid various reports of irregularities, there are some suggesting to Hillary Clinton that she should request a recount in those three swing states. She doesn't have much time left if she is indeed going to request that recount. I have to say there's absolutely no indication that Hillary Clinton is planning to call for a recount. That would be an extremely dramatic move, and it might raise some questions about reopening the outcome of this election. She, at this point, appears to be a woman who is now at peace with the fact that, to the best of her ability, at peace with the fact that she lost the election and that Donald Trump will be the country's next president. But nonetheless, these suggestions that there may have been some difficulties, there may have been some uncertainty about the results in those three states is at least fueling the suggestion that she ought to do something about it, and fueling the suggestion that Donald Trump is not going to be a legitimate president. And remember, the one thing we do know, even without a recount in those three states, is that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. She got more than a million votes more than Donald Trump. She lost the election in that electoral college that you and I were talking about just a few days before voting day. You know, can anything be done to reverse the result? I think that's a very high mountain for Democrats and their supporters to think about climbing.
Yeah.
But there are some people out there making the case that it should be looked at.
Well, stranger things have happened. Thank you very much, Simon Marks. Do enjoy Thanksgiving tomorrow. Hope you have a brilliant time. You're joining
President-elect
in Florida. Or
Thank you very much, Chris.
No. Okay, great. Thanks ever so much, Simon. Simon Marks live from Washington. You're listening to LBC London News.